And they run through our ass like shit through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
It's ridiculous that they do. That was a huge colony. Well, we didn't miss it. You know, the typical rah, 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 zip, boom, bah, boo.
You don't cuss. You don't drink. So what are your vices?
I have been known to chew a bit of tobacco when I get a little tired or watching film.
Hey, I'm Coach O. I just love my Hummer. I have my Hummer. You need a Hummer? Tell them about it, JoJo.
They've won the biggest championship, and that's the championship of life.
Gas control. Everybody just do your job. You understand that?
Welcome in the latest episode of That SEC Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. I go by SEC Mike on Twitter. And I'm joined, as always, by my cousin Shane, who goes by Big Orange Vols on Twitter. What are you up to, you big Tennessee homer?
Hey, buddy, what's going on?
Hey, not much, Shane. How you doing?
Oh, shit. I'm peachy, what do they say, peachy king jelly bean. If I were any finer, I'd be two people. Finer than a frog hair split three ways, Mike. I don't know how they say it where you're at, but there's several ways of saying it's good. Football's right around the corner. We just got a couple more days, and I'm hoping that we're going to have a – I think this may be the best weekend of football so far.
Yeah, it's really starting to gear up. We're starting to see what these teams are doing in SEC play. We got some schools falling apart. You got some rising to the occasion. And the drama is never, never far away from the action here. But and we do have a bit of a drama to jump into. But before we get to that, we did want to mention one thing. So last night, Monday Night Football, Drew Brees broke the all-time passing record. And it's inspired me to kind of send out this tweet here because I just think there's a little too much negativity, especially on Twitter, when people are talking about these high school recruits. And but you know, everyone that is a little bit too passionate on Twitter, and I'm not trying to single out any fan base because I've seen it from all of them. You know, anytime a guy say decommits from Tennessee, you got Tennessee fans saying Jeremy Pruitt didn't want him. You know, if let's say a guy commits to Tennessee over Georgia, you got Georgia fans saying Kirby Smart didn't want him.
Yeah.
You see this up and down. So I get tired of seeing this all the time. Imagine if people were be saying that about the people that were tweeting it. I don't think they would appreciate it, particularly when they were 17 or 18 years old.
No, exactly. And what you put out yesterday was awesome. And one thing I can't stand more than anything is – Don't tweet recruits. I don't understand. It's like you think everybody agrees to it, but then every time you see a recruit commit or decommit, there's like 15, 20 comments about, you know, either bashing or praising. It's just like, come on, man. You know, let's don't do this. He's sending it out for his buddies. He doesn't care what a 48-year-old from, you know, Newport, Tennessee thinks about his commitment. So, but what you put out hit the nail on the head, and I'd like to read it here. It says, for all the high school prospects being overlooked by major programs, Drew Brees had two, not one, but two FBS offers out of high school, Purdue and Kentucky, and had zero stars. He is from Austin, and Texas didn't even want him. If you know you can play at the highest level and work for it, anything can happen. And I thought that was awesome because, you know, I watch a lot of football on Sunday, and we get caught up in these stars and we get caught up in these ratings and recruiting and things like that. But there's a lot of players that play on Sunday that didn't play for the University of Alabama or didn't play for the University of Georgia or Tennessee. I mean, there's a lot of guys – I still a big program like a Benny Snell was told he wasn't good enough to go to Ohio State. And here he is trying to do everything with his chip on his shoulder. So if you're going to spew negativity, well, do it to your friends. Don't do it on their feed. And I like the words of encouragement you sent out yesterday. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, and that's all this really was. And I've already started to see people, you know, while a lot of people did retweet this or like this, a lot of people got into, you know, disputes underneath it saying, you know, some say recruiting doesn't matter. Some obviously think that it does. And of course it does. And this is not me trying to say, you know, you shouldn't, if you really want your team to succeed, yeah, they should probably try to sign 25 5-stars, you know. Obviously mm-hmm. that's never going to happen, not even Alabama and you know, Georgia's doing that. But I'm not trying to discredit those services or what they are, but It's just more about how many people are overlooked. And, you know, I think a lot of people don't even understand what goes into these evaluations from these recruiting services. And like I said, I'm not trying to bash them, but I'll give you an example. I've spoke to the people that run Rivals.
Mm-hmm.
And according to them, they lean heavily on prospects that they've seen. And that's, I mean, that's fair game. Like, I think it's much easier to rate a high school guy that you've seen in person than someone you're just watching their film or looking at their stats.
Yeah.
But they also told me that their people don't drive out to rural Mississippi and Alabama because it's a waste of their time. Like, why go out there and watch kids play? You may get one or two prospects. I mean, you may get a couple dozen. It's a crapshoot, basically, is what I'm trying to say. So
yeah,
they stick to Atlanta. They stick to Nashville, Memphis, and all the big cities. That's why you see so many recruits come out of these big cities. And, mm-hmm. you know, it, like I said, it's not to bash the recruiting services, but there's just so many players that are undervalued, underrated, that don't get to all these All-American games. And hell, mm-hmm. half the time, the players that do well at these All-American games, like a Blake Barnett, who was a five-star quarterback for Alabama, you know, that was the guy that left after Jalen Hurts became the starter. The story I was told is he was a damn receiver, but he was so athletic, he was destroying all the metrics for how high he can jump and throw the ball and run and all that. That's right. Why he got his five-star status, but he couldn't play a damn lick of football, so... And that's why he's transferred like three times since Alabama. So we can't always buy into these ratings. But the message I just have is just for everyone out there that believes, just if they believe in themselves, they believe in their talent, and you work for it, just like Drew Brees here, anything can happen.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, the leading receiver in the NFL right now, do you know who that is? Just take a while. It's the first receiver ever to have – 500-yard receiving games in a row. 500 receiving games in a row. Love to have him on my fantasy team, but I don't. Adam Thielen. And do you know where Adam Thielen went to school? It wasn't Alabama. It was Minnesota State University. So, you know, talent comes from different places. And that's the cool thing about football. And how many times have you seen a great class – 2 or 3 years later, just be total shit. And then your coach gets fired. Mm-hmm. I know I've seen it. So, you know, it's just, I don't know. The main point I want to make is I just don't tweet recruits. Don't be that guy. So
don't be that guy.
And on the flip side of the coin, what happened yesterday was awesome. He broke my boy Peyton Manning's record. Did you see that game?
I didn't watch a whole lot of it because I was editing this damn podcast, but I did see some of it, yes.
Yes, well, he did, and Peyton Manning put out a video congratulating Drew Brees, so I'd like to include that here.
Peyton, FYI, Drew Brees just broke your record.
Which one?
All-time passing yards.
Passing yards? Oh, okay. So I still have the touchdown record, right?
He's actually on pace to break that, too.
What? Great. Drew, for 1,000 days, I've held the record for all-time passing yards in the NFL. And I gotta tell you, it's been the greatest 1,000 days of my life. And thanks to you, that's over now. And you've ruined that for me. So thank you very much. I have nothing left to look forward to except slicing my tomatoes, making dinner for my family, putting together this wedge salad. Also, let this serve as the congratulations for the touchdown record, because as you can see, I'm very busy. I don't have time to keep doing these videos for you, congratulating you. But in all seriousness, Drew, congratulations on this record. You've done it the right way. All your hard work and dedication have paid off. You and I have come a long way since this picture back in 2000 when you were in college and I was in my third year in the NFL. So, way to go. Proud of you. Good luck the rest of the way.
That's pretty awesome. But I also wanted to add that I saw Drew Brees got a damn certificate, and he got flagged for the damn team celebrating. How stupid is that?
Oh, that's horrible. Did you see the certificate? It was like something you got for perfect attendance in third grade, you know? It's like, you just broke you just broke an NFL record, but here's your little certificate.
All right, Shane, so enough of that. Let's jump into some SEC action. And you know, we got to play a little sample for this one because it sounds like there's a little trouble down on the plains.
There's trouble in paradise.
All right, Shane, so this is information that I got on Monday, I believe it was. I shared this with you. We didn't really want to touch on it on the podcast necessarily because I was told this was inside information. I didn't really feel right about, you know, discussing things that, you know, there's people working hard around the SEC reporting. But since that time, this has been all over the internet. And the writer who's works for 24/7 Sports there, he covers Auburn. His name's Brandon Marcello.
Mm-hmm.
He's even went on the radio and discussed this topic in depth. So I think it's acceptable to talk about because if he's going to be out there talking about it, so can we. But what this is apparently there's trouble in the locker room down there in Auburn, according to Brandon Marcello. And we don't have his clips here, but based on what I heard him say on the radio today, this is not one or two people. This is at least, he said he wouldn't say how many, but he said at least three people that he talked to that all confirmed this news. And it's pretty lengthy here, so I don't want to go over the whole damn thing. It would take too long to read. But basically, you know, the little cheat list here of what he's talking about is, he says apparently there's a bunch of animosity in the locker room. And mm-hmm. there has been for some time based on the fact that a lot of the defensive players don't really care for Jarrett Stidham and his leadership. He says this is something that goes back all the way to last year. You know, defensive players are kind of upset with his play and how he responds to basically not having a good performance, skipping around the damn locker room and stuff like that.
Wow.
This was also interesting. The offensive coordinator, Chip Lindsey, says he, when he calls the plays, he has to give them to Malzahn first, and Malzahn approves or denies them. So it's kind of like a filtered. So Chip Lindsey is calling the plays, but I never heard of such a thing where he's got to check with the head coach before he calls them. That's pretty damn strong. And then just a lot of players, they're saying Stidham is not really a good leader. They don't care for how he portrays himself. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have a killer instinct. His words ring hollow.
I thought the receivers talking about leaving, some of the linemen.
Yeah, so there's several players that are frustrated with Gus Malzahn's system, and they're basically, you know, they don't think they're being utilized. We've seen that already when they lost. And keep in mind, this is an Auburn team that we talked about before the redshirt transfer like guideline kind of came into effect. They lost their starting tight end left via transfer. Mm-hmm. They lost their biggest recruit they ever signed under Gus Malzahn at the receiver position, Nate Craig Myers, and his brother, who I believe was a linebacker or a defensive back, he left as well. So there's a little bit more smoke to this than just chat board comments here. You know, he's saying the offensive coordinator is probably going to look to get out, and this is a guy that started his college career there at Auburn under Gus Malzahn. So this is a close confidant of his, and if he's jumping ship, and keep in mind, remember Rhett Lashley, their last offensive coordinator, kind of left in a weird situation where he just jumped it to become UConn's offensive coordinator, and you kind of left scratching your head, why in the hell would the Auburn offensive coordinator take that job? But
yeah,
I think it kind of speaks to what's going on here at Auburn. And lastly, one thing they said, and this is actually not something from here, but something I heard from an NFL scout, but basically thinks that Stidham, while he could come back for his senior year, they don't believe that he's, you know, progressing his game. And basically, if he comes back for his senior year, he has no chance of improving his stock in the Gus Malzahn system because it's just so dumbed down and simplified that, you know, you could stay in it for 10 years. You're still not going to get the basics of what you need to know at the NFL level. And we've seen that. Gus mm-hmm. Malzahn's never had a quarterback go on to the NFL outside of Cam Newton. And I think it's, you know, that's in part because Cam Newton is such an amazing athlete that I think he would fit in any system. But, you know, a lot going on there, Shane. So what's your thoughts on all this?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of wondered at first when we had a lot of transfers out. And or I did anyway, but I didn't think it was like locker room problems. I think it was just people taking advantage of the red shirt rule. But then, you know, the performance on the field, what surprises me is just, you know, we've hit hard, real hard about this offensive line. And it just, and just the offense in general, there just seems to be no continuity. There's no, they're not on the same page. And now when something like this comes out, you're kind of wondering, well, is the entire locker room divided? Is this a thing where the linemen aren't even talking to their quarterback? And, you know, you can't have that if you're going to try to right this wrong and get this shit back in order. And I don't know. These are some pretty bold comments. I didn't hear him really talk about it today at media. But, you know, it's this type of stuff, this type of news that starts a snowball. And if they come out and underperform or, God forbid, lose to Tennessee Saturday, when they get out of that locker room come Monday, I'm just telling you, if this game goes south, somebody's going to pay the price.
Now, clearly, Shane, we've got some frustrated people here, but how much do you think that goes away if they start winning some ball games?
Oh, winning fixes everything, Mike. You come out and win. If they, on the flip side of that coin, come out and hang 40 points on Tennessee, mm-hmm. you feel a little bit more confident. You know, you're not so pissed off that Stenham's running around with that smirk on his face. And then the next week, you come out and who they got? Georgia? Is it Georgia the week after?
No, the following week they play Ole Miss, who can't play a lick of defense, so they should be set up there as well.
And then who do they have?
And then they have a bye week, and then they kind of run the gauntlet. They go Texas A&M at home, at Georgia, and at Alabama.
I knew it was coming up. Yeah, so think about it, Mike. If you come out and you don't barely squeak by, you can't squeak by these two teams. You were just not too long ago ranked in the top 10 or close to it. If they come out and they squeak by these next two teams or, God forbid, like I said, lose – then that not only did they lose the locker room, they lost the fan base immediately. But if they come out, they put these two teams away, get that bye, and then go through that gauntlet, like you said, yeah. I mean, like I said, victories fix a lot of broken things. So that's what Gus has got to be focused on right now.
All right, Shane, a lot to digest there, but enough with just that story. Let's go around the league.
Let's get around the league, brother.
Now let's go around the league.
We hadn't decided how we're going to play the guys, so, and I wouldn't tell you if I did. So, you know, I don't mind you asking a question, but I don't need to answer it.
No, I mean, I'll be whistling Rocky Top by the end of the week. All our play. I mean, it's just like, right? I mean, just hear it over and over, and you know, like every other or every third song, it'll roll through within the crowd noise that we play at practice, so you just you get used to it. It's a catchy tune, right?
This game's gonna be a street fight. I mean, some of you guys don't know who Kimbo Slice is. Hopefully you do. And you go back to it, man, this isn't a sanctioned fight. This is a street fight. I mean, this is the SEC. So, man, it's time to put on the hard hat, lunch pail, let's get to work.
All right, Shane, sticking there with Auburn.
War damn Eagle.
Big topic there. Obviously, they're playing Tennessee. They got to get this ship going in the right direction. Otherwise, I don't know how much, you know, Gus Malzahn's locked in there, but it's got to be an untenable situation if he keeps losing, particularly to teams that are trying to build up their program. But Gus Malzahn met with the media on Tuesday, and, you know, of course, this was going to come up. This was the main topic of his press conference. It was basically one question after another of the offensive line, the quarterback play, and what the hell's going on there. So here's Gus Malzahn on Jarrett Stidham and his basically just the entire offensive struggles here.
Yeah, you know, I know he's aware of it. I know he's going to do everything in his power to correct it. You know, he's really tough on himself, and he's a competitor.
Do you think it's a function of him being scared of or being affected by the rush?
I don't think so. I think he will be better in that area the second half of the season. I really do.
I got another one about Jarrett. I mean, he's just not, doesn't seem like he's the same player that he was this time last year. What do you think is going on with him?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, he's pretty tough on himself. I think if you ask him, he'd be frustrated too. But it's all of the above. It's everything that goes with it. It's not just one thing and all that. I mean, he's a good quarterback, and I really expect him and the offense to get better in the second half. And I think you'll see a difference in our offense the second half. I really do.
All right, Shane. I mean, it just this seems like we're just kind of playing Gus Malzahn comments on repeat the last month or so. Does Malzahn strike you as someone that has confidence that they can get this thing turned around?
No. I mean, this thing, like you said, we hear it. It's the same thing. I mean, you could have pulled a clip from 5 weeks ago. I think it'd be the same week. You know, I don't know, man. The thing about it is they're going to have to change something. And listen, if Gus is filtering everything that the offensive coordinator's putting out, maybe that's the problem. Maybe you let go of the reins a little bit and let him try to dial something up, you know, so he can focus on the whole team as opposed to just one aspect of it. So, I don't know. I think don't be surprised if they mix some things up and try to get some sort of spark, you know, particularly in the running game, mm-hmm. because that's where they've been struggling the most.
Well, it wasn't only Gus Malzahn that met with the media today, but Jarrett Stidham, you know, give him credit for coming out here and speaking to the media. Mm-hmm. Just kind of facing all these tough questions right now, but and it was basically the same thing here. You know, what's wrong? Why the performance dip? And it was not asked specifically about that report that we opened with there, but you know, I did face a lot of tough questions. So here's Jarrett Stidham on just, you know, what the hell's going on there at Auburn.
Jarrett, do you have any kind of grasp on what the issue is on the deep balls?
I got to make the throw. I mean, just like the other night, I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've made that throw in practice, and for whatever reason, I just didn't make it. And so I just got to, whether it's focus in more, whatever it needs to be, I got to make those throws, and that's what it comes down to.
When you go back and watch that one, does it make it even, did it sting a little more when you saw a couple of plays that could have been for you guys?
Oh, for sure. You know, I think just from what I can recall off the top of my head, we left 21 points out on the field, and that obviously would have helped us win the game. And, you know, those plays, you know, they hurt whenever you watch them on Sunday, but at the same time, you know, you got to put it in the past and you got to go to work. And like I said, I got to make that throw and make some other throws. But we're going to continue to work and fully confident that we're going to get things going.
I mean, do you overthrow in practice too, or is it just something that happens in the games?
I mean, not every throw is going to be necessarily perfect. I mean, I'm very hard on myself. And so, you know, nobody was more frustrated with that throw than me. And, you know, in practice, you know, I got to continue to make those throws and then I got to translate it to the game and make the throw. I mean, that's what it comes down to.
All right, Shane. So how do you think Stidham handled this tough week of news here?
That had to be some tough line of questions. If you listen to it, it was like, okay, man. Dude's wide freaking open. How did you miss him? You know, and then they'd ask something else, and they'd come back like, you know, when you practice and you're throwing against air, do you have problems throwing it to the wide receiver, or you overthrow? I mean, it was just, it's like they kept replaying the play we all saw Saturday, and kind of felt bad for him there for a minute, you know. So, he handled it the best he could. With a smile on his face, and it's got to be tough. But I don't know, man. Quarterbacks, you know, they're so mentally involved in the game. You wonder if this is rattling him at all, you know, because like I said, the media spent half the time talking about him overthrowing the ball. So maybe he, in the back of his mind, he's a little bit hesitant when he comes out next time and wants to tuck and run, which, you know, he's capable of doing. But I don't know. I'm just curious if that poor performance, how it affects his next few ball games.
Yeah, and for anyone that did not see the play that Shane's talking about and that Stidham was asked about, I did tweet out an image of it, and it's pretty bad. Just the fact that his receiver's open by about 20 yards and he overshoots him. And you know, I've been really watching the tape of that game. I rewatched it once again today on Tuesday, and I know this might sound kind of crazy. Auburn only scored 9 points, and they struggled, obviously, to run the ball. They're not hitting 100-yard mark for 3 weeks in a row. But there was, you know, take away a play here or there, and it's a different ball game for Auburn. I mean, like that case in point, that big play, if he completes that, his receiver's walking into the end zone.
Oh, yeah.
There was the big run by Booby Whitlow, who he was stretching for the goal line, and the ball slipped out, and it was ruled a touchback. I mean, those two plays don't happen, I mean, they probably win that Mississippi State game. I mean, they missed a field goal. I mean, their kicker's been kind of inconsistent, but he's not terrible by any means. So, you know, I don't necessarily think it's the end of the world. And, you know, kind of like we were talking about, if they get back on the right track here against Tennessee, and they should, I mean, not to say that they will, the way they're playing, I think they can basically lose to anybody as well, but I don't think they're that far off from getting right back on track. Not to say that they're obviously their hopes for winning the SEC are done, but
yeah,
I think, you know, it's pretty easy to pile on Auburn right now, but I could see them turning this thing around and winning eight games this year. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, because if a defense could keep you in the game, then you have a chance to win any game. So, and this is a legit defense. There was a couple of mistakes that they made last week that they typically don't. And this Auburn feels like one of those teams that can really, if they do show up, can really affect this conference. You know, if they get their shit figured out when they're playing Georgia or even in that Iron Bowl because it's a, you know, a different type of atmosphere, they still have potential to you know, wreck this division, and I don't know how you'd want to. It could affect who's in the SEC championships, potentially even the playoffs, things like that. So, don't count Auburn out. They've got enough talent on that team to beat anybody in this conference if they just all come together at the same time.
Yeah, and you mentioned that defense. So they did give up a touchdown with about 2 minutes left in that game. So it was a 19-16 game until that point. Obviously, that's makes it look much different. And the drive previous to that, they blocked a Mississippi State field goal. So, I mean, they were busting their ass to stay in the game. But when your offense is just not even moving the damn ball, and I believe that the time of possession was like 42-28.
Yeah.
I mean, any defense is going to cave under that. So now, does that play an effect with this 11 a.m. kick? You know, I would imagine Auburn fans are not going to be that interested in this Tennessee game. The Auburn team's going to have to wake up at what, like 5 or 6 in the damn morning to get up for this one. I mean, this is everything's is set up for Tennessee to come in here and make some noise. I just don't know if they're capable of doing it.
Yeah, and again, you never know, man. They could. Could you imagine? I'm just saying, because if Tennessee does go down there and then beats these guys, not in a close game, just 2 or 3 touchdowns, just Auburn's never in it. Can you imagine what we're talking about? You talk about headlines on Monday, Mike. Whoo, boy.
Well, it's Tuesday night as we record this, and you can tell Shane is drunk on that orange Kool-Aid.
Oh, man, I'm feeling it, Mike. I'm feeling it, like you said, just all this bad news. But I'm curious, man, if this is really going on behind the scenes, just is there going to be – like LSU, when they had troubles, they had that players-only meeting. And it seemed like it really gelled that team, and it got them firing on all cylinders. It's like, does Davis, do some of these, you know, Stenham, do the seniors – some of these guys come in and say, "Hey, listen, let's get this thing going again. Okay, we've had a rough start. We got to have each other's back. You know, we got to be out there. I got to trust you. You got to trust me. And you know, just squash this negativity and come out and start playing with some fire and fury. Because if they do that again, watch out, because Auburn has enough talent to beat anybody."
Yeah, and you know, we need to move on from this topic soon, but I do want to hit this final note because you did kind of strike a nerve there during Gus Malzahn's press conference. The guy that wrote that scathing report, Brandon Marcello, he asked Gus Malzahn point blank, has Jarrett Stidham, you know, can he think of any specific instances where Stidham, you know, showed leadership and, you know, inspired confidence in his teammates on the sideline? And, you know, when you ask for specifics, I think you assume a specific answer. And Gus Malzahn just said, yes. Yes, he has. I was like, what? So I mean, it seemed like he was setting him up there. But, you know, I don't think he was going to throw his quarterback under the bus. But Gus, he might be full of shit there.
Yeah. Dude, enough about Auburn. You're right. I just saw the time. I'm like, damn. May have to edit some of this shit out.
All right, Shane, let's jump to South Carolina where – Will Muschamp, Jake Bentley both met with the media on Tuesday, and kind of an interesting deal there as well. And obviously South Carolina came from behind, beat Missouri. It was a huge win in a damn monsoon, and that cost Shane some money there.
Yeah.
But it was interesting because Will Muschamp announced today that as long as Jake Bentley is healthy to go, and it, by all indications he is, they're going to be benching Michael Scarnecchia, who was basically the MVP of that South Carolina game. So here's Will Muschamp on that decision and, you know, everything that went into it.
Jake practiced today. I thought he looked good. If he's healthy for Saturday, he'll be the starter. But I've told Jake and Mike, both of them need to be ready to go.
Will it go up to pregame like last week when determining if Jake can go? And if he does play, do you have like a leash on him and saying like now that you have Scarnecchia behind him?
No, I think that it'll be determined before that. He looked good today. I think he's going to be fine. And at the end of the day, we'll continue to look at some mobility things tomorrow. But, you know, again, I'm never going to put a young man in a situation where he can't protect himself and he couldn't have Saturday. Mike performed really well, and a guy that we had a lot of confidence in going into the game and even more so obviously after it. And at the end of the day, we'll make decisions in the game to win the game.
Can you take us through that decision, why Jake over Michael?
Well, he's played a lot of really good football for us. He's got a lot of experience, I think he's played really well. And obviously Mike's got a smaller sample set, played well with his opportunity. But, you know, I'm making a decision where I think helps us win. And at the end of the day, that's what we're going to do. But we've got two guys I have confidence that we can win with. So I feel comfortable with both guys.
All right, Shane, do you think that Will Muschamp is making the right call here?
I don't know, man. Because the thing about it is Jake Bentley, is he a good quarterback? I think so. But Michael came out last week and got him a victory. So, what do you want? Somebody that looks good, that's got flashes of being a high-caliber player, or do you want the victory? Give me the W every time. I don't care how he gets it. So it's kind of hard because this team, if you watch that game, dude, they everything but carrying him off the field, this team did. And I haven't seen them do anything like that with Jake Bentley. So I don't know, man. I think there is a little bit of quarterback controversy. And I'm curious, as a South Carolina fan, who do you want? Do you want Jake to be your quarterback, or do you want Mike? Or do you want Mike to have a short leash or vice versa, have Jake with a short leash? It just, I don't know. They got something they got to deal with up there.
Yeah, based on all the indications I've seen from the fans, I think they want Scarnecchia. And I think it's based on the fact that, you know, just like everyone else, they've been hearing such good things about Jake Bentley for 3 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And he has yet to really deliver a signature win outside of that very first one against Tennessee.
Yeah.
I mean, since that point, there was the Michigan Bowl game, I guess you could say, but South Carolina's offense was not good in that game either. So, I don't know. I think they've kind of like lost some confidence in him. But here's Jake Bentley. So, he met with the media, and every damn question he got was about Scarnecchia.
Jake, what did you see from Michael on Saturday that impressed you the most?
Yeah, I think just his confidence going into it. But I think, you know, that's – I get to see that every day at practice and going on 3 years now with him. I mean, he has that same confidence every day at practice, making the type of throws and just going through his reads very confidently. So it wasn't really a surprise to me. I knew he was going to go in there and play well, and that's what he did.
How do you guys approach this week? I mean, it was your job, and he started last week. I guess he is at least being considered to start this week. So how does that go, and how are you guys taking that competition?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, we talked about it with coach and everything, and as long as I'm ready to go, that's the plan, is to for me to go out there and give it all I got for my team, and that's the plan moving forward. And Mike's gonna be ready to go. I mean, I think he showed what he can do, and he's a great quarterback.
You talked about seeing Michael perform well in practice, but now that you've seen it, you've seen him in a game. You saw him play well, saw him lead the team to victory. How much better does that make the team knowing now that you've got someone else who can come in and also play winning football at quarterback?
Yeah, for sure. I think it gives our team, you know, a boost of confidence. I think it gives our coaches confidence that, you know, whether it's me or anybody on the team, there's not one person that makes our team, and that is the next man up. And Scar did a great job of embracing that mentality and really just you know, going in there and doing his job. And that's what we talked about before the game, is just to do your job, and that's what he did.
All right, Shane, so it based on what Bentley says, they're pretty tight, so there may not be any kind of locker room drama here, at least from Bentley's eyes, but what do you read into after listening to this?
Oh, dude. Yeah, tell the truth, Thursday, Bentley's saying, man, this mother, yeah. They ain't tight. I'm telling you right now, because last week, Bentley got a little taste of that humble pie. You know, he's been told he's the greatest. I'll never forget that Tennessee game when he came in. They must have said it 50 times. Oh, how young this guy is. He should be going to prom right now, and yada, yada, yada. And they crowned him. Last year, he struggled. You know, he had a lot of turnovers in the offseason. They were bragging about this up-tempo offense, the weapons he has. Bentley is the guy. They should be compared to Georgia and Alabama. And where is it? I haven't seen it. And then, in fact, the only game that South Carolina actually has looked decent this year, Jake wasn't the quarterback. So, I don't know, man. I like you said, that question, if you watch that, there's like 10 minutes. 8 minutes was asking him about Scar. He was sweating profusely. He was just like biting his bottom lip. You could just tell that he did not want to talk about Michael anymore. And but you have to. And if Bentley comes out and struggles, I swear you're going to see him yanked. You're going to see him fake some sort of injury. Michael's going to go in there, and because that's what the fans want. And if you listen to Coach, that's what he wants. He wants the best player out there.
Yeah, and they have a tough game here against A&M. They host A&M. And speaking of A&M, let's jump to College Station, where
Giga Maggots.
Jimbo Fisher was on Paul Feinbaum's show recently, and you know, he kind of had a long spiel here about Will Muschamp and the three-game stretch here, but I specifically wanted to just add this clip about, you know, this three-game road stretch. We kind of talked about it on the previous episode here, but so A&M goes to South Carolina, then they get a bye, then they go to Mississippi State and to Auburn, and it's just kind of like Jimbo's after playing Clemson and Alabama. It's just a damn season of welcome to the SEC.
And then you look down, and you have three consecutive road games. There's an off week in there, but I don't ever remember seeing that. Is that just because you're the new guy, or is that just a quirk of the schedule?
I think they set that up or knew I was coming or something. I mean, you're going on the road to South Carolina. You're going on the road to Mississippi State. It's a great team. And you're going on the road to Auburn. I mean, so that's very, very difficult. And but, you know, that's part of it. We got an off week in there, like you say. This is a huge week for us here. Then hopefully we can recoup and get better on the things we got to do at a midterm report and then try to go on the road those first two games and then finish up back here at Cal Field.
All right, Shane, so, I mean, I guess this is just kind of par for the course. You look around, LSU, Tennessee, I mean, almost all these damn schools got a damn gauntlet here. What do you make of A&M's three-game road trip here?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. There's so many good teams in the West, and surprisingly, there's more good teams in the East than we thought. So it's just like, whatever schedule you're looking at, there's some really tough games on there, and A&M's not avoiding any of them either. Not to mention they got to get through the West, but you know the teams that they're playing out of the West or out of the East aren't easy either. So that's the SEC, brother. Oh, you ain't Tallahassee anymore, Jimbo. Thank God. I think that hurricane's about to hit. Oh shit! All right, sorry about that.
All right, Shane. So, another game we got on the docket here. We don't have a clip here, but I just wanted to discuss it because I saw an interesting article here. But Ole Miss at Arkansas. Remember, this game's in Little Rock, so it's not the typical. It's not really a home game for either team, honestly. But you know, Arkansas comes in at 1-5. Ole Miss is kind of like a quiet 4-2. I think that's one of the quietest 4-2s around the nation, but the article that I read was just saying that basically this is a must win for Ole Miss for a lot of reasons. Basically, momentum, you know, the stability there of Matt Luke, and just kind of if he knows what the hell he's doing. What do you make of that comment? Do you think this is a must win for Ole Miss?
No, that's stupid, man. There's no must win on this schedule. Ole Miss can't go to a ball game. Ole Miss can't go to the SEC championship. I mean, who cares? You know, Coach Luke's not going to be the coach next year. I know people want to believe that they found him one, but that's not the guy. And when the sanctions are off, then they can open up that wallet and get him a coach that will come in there and make Ole Miss relevant again. So to say this thing's a must win, no. They should be happy that they have four wins right now, in my opinion.
So Ole Miss sucks. They're not going to bowl. Fire the coach. That's Cousin Shane's take there.
Well, I mean, just think about it. I mean, Coach Luke, is Coach Luke the future? I mean, I love the backstory. I know that he gives his all for Ole Miss. The locker room loves him, I'm sure. But is he the future? Is he the guy that's going to make Ole Miss relevant again? I don't think so. I think you got to get somebody in there with, somebody, I don't know. Not as shady as what they've had in the past, but they got to get somebody in there that can, just bring in some recruits.
Well, I got you, and I see what you're saying there, and I mean, I tend to agree. I don't think Matt Luke is the answer, because I think if you're at a school like Ole Miss, you kind of need a coach that is, can punch above Ole Miss, because basically you're facing so many monsters like Alabama and LSU, and A&M looks like it's going to turn into a damn monster here soon. So You really need a coach that has some kind of advantage there. Whether it be an outstanding defensive coach or an outstanding offensive coach. And I don't necessarily see that under Matt Luke, but I'm not ready to just say he sucks and he's going to be gone. I don't see any way he's not back next year. I think that's kind of the make or break year for him.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if I'd go as far to say must win, but I think if they do drop this game to Arkansas, I think their season is in the toilet after that, because if you can't beat them, I mean, who are you going to beat in the West,
Yeah.
But they have some winnable games here. Auburn's sputtering. That's their next one. If they beat Arkansas and beat Auburn, I mean, I think that sets up for a hell of a end of the year. And, they still have – they have at A&M, they got South Carolina, and they finish at home Mississippi State. I mean, I think there's a really good chance they finish this season with 8 wins. And if you talk about a team that has no bowl hopes – going out there and winning 8 games in the first year of the coach's full-time tenure in the SEC West, I think that's something to build upon there for the Ole Miss program.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I tell you, you want to talk about must-win. Arkansas's in a must-win situation. If they're barely holding on hope to making a bowl game. They got to win 5. If they get past this one, they've got Tulsa. That should be a victory. Vanderbilt, maybe a victory. And if they could pull off one against Missouri or Mississippi State, because they're not going to beat LSU, I mean, you talk about a must win. That's a must win, because you definitely want to get to a bowl. I mean, that's got to be – I think that's Chad's, his main goal, or maybe just getting an SEC victory maybe his main goal. But I don't know. It's just – I don't know. You talk about must win. I think there's – maybe you're right. Maybe there's no pressure on Luke right now. Just go out there, have fun. That's what they're doing. And say what you want, they got a 4-2 record. They look pretty damn good, man.
Well, here's what I recommend. If Ole Miss comes out here and beats up on Arkansas, if I'm an Ole Miss fan, I'm talking all the trash to any Arkansas people I know and telling them, we just put your ass on a bowl band too. All right, Shane, let's jump to Tuscaloosa, where, once again, we don't have a clip here, but I just thought this was kind of interesting. Mack Wilson, junior linebacker, who, one of their most talented defenders there at Alabama, he's come out and apologized, for being kind of the leader of the defense. He's just apologizing for the standard being kind of lowered there at Alabama for the defense, I guess, because they allowed 31 to Arkansas. What do you make of a damn guy apologizing for, Alabama's winning every game by 40 points here?
This is the only thing I can guess, Mike, that the Alabama Crimson Tide must not be allowed cell phones, computer access, televisions in their room, phone calls after 9. And Coach Saban is just telling them every day how bad they are. He is shaming these guys. And then they come out and they're apologizing for winning 61 to 31 or something like that?
65-31.
Come on.
On the road.
And he was legit. He felt, I mean, you could feel it. He was emotionally sad that he let down Tuscaloosa. I mean, have you listened to Paul Feinbaum lately? It's just, I mean, these guys are oozing with confidence. It's oh, my God, yeah. That's what it is. These players are cut off from the outside world. They don't know what's going on outside Tuscaloosa. And Saban's just reminded them how shitty they are.
Or how about this, Shane? Maybe this guy's got – he's you know, too many people bitching about Alabama didn't cover the spread. They didn't cover it by about – I think 1 or 2 points, and it was because their damn kicker missed an extra point. So thank God for that. I had Arkansas there in the points, but yeah, outside of that, I mean, they're just whipping ass every week, and I'm not understanding why in the hell anyone feels the need to apologize after an ass beating like this.
Maybe that's what he was, in a roundabout way, apologizing to Uncle Shane for putting money on this game.
All right, Chad, one other thing with Alabama, I would just I didn't run this by you prior, but this is a note I would just want to touch on here. Tua is completing 66.7% of his throws downfield. So he's 14 of 22 for 211 yards and 4 touchdowns. And why that 66.7 number is so important, I was going to throw this at you. So Baker Mayfield, you know, obviously the number one draft pick, mm-hmm. his numbers – 54% on those throws. Sam Darnold, who was also, I believe, the number 3 overall pick, his number there was 37%. And Josh Allen, who was also the Buffalo Bills' first-round selection, 25%. So, I mean, Tua is just like shredding guys that are top draft picks and their numbers. I mean, what's
more? His number again?
Tua's number is 66.7. Compared to Baker at 54.
Right, that's 66.66 rounded up. That's what it is. Tua done sold his soul, man.
That's a good point there. So we haven't factored that one in. Maybe he's the devil.
Yes, yeah, wearing red, brother. I don't know. I hate talking. That's one thing I don't like talking about is Alabama stats. And because, I mean, we all know it. They're next level right now. I want to see some freaking competition, Mike. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I mean, travel to Neyland Stadium in 2 weeks.
There it is, brother. Third Saturday in October, they're going to have a little dose of Pruitt. And guess what? He took the playbook with him, so he knows what they're bringing. That's it, man. That's all. I want to see a challenge. Everybody's talking about how great they are, but, you know, they really haven't been tested. A&M was their biggest test, and you know, there was moments that game looked pretty good, but they still got some tougher teams to play. And when they do, that's when we're going to find out just how good this offense is. And I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is the best. I mean, you heard Chief yesterday talking about the best he's ever seen. Mm-hmm. But then on the flip side of the coin, you got Mac coming out apologizing for their defense. So we'll see, brother.
Well, speaking of the lack of competition for Alabama, this is just – I mean – it just seems like everything's going their damn way in terms of the schedule and everything too. But so they host Missouri this week, and Barry Odom announced on Tuesday that their number one receiver, their star receiver there, Emmanuel Hall, he will not make the trip. He's not going to play. And he's basically the only guy that could test this team deep. So we may have to wait a damn 3 weeks before Alabama gets tested when they go to Baton Rouge.
That's a big hit, man. Cause The guy is great, and I was kind of hoping that he would have been out there. I didn't know that he wouldn't until earlier today. And, you talk about testing the defense. Him and Hall, they have potential of doing that, but it just sucks we're not going to be able to get to see that. Just another weapon that they won't have against Alabama.
Yeah, and I think that really hurt them against South Carolina because you could tell they didn't really have another guy like Hall that could stretch the field. Mm-hmm. And just without that presence, it severely limits what Missouri can do on offense.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, wouldn't you sit him too, though? I mean, if you were 80%, you want Hall limping out against Alabama, or you say, you know what, let's just take another week.
All right, Shane, last topic I got here. Let's jump to Starkville, where old Joe Moorhead, firejomo.com. I don't think that website's operational at the moment, but he was on Paul Feinbaum, just asked about how they fixed that offense in a week. You know, it sputtered against Kentucky. We looked really bad against Florida, but they piled up, what was it, 349 rushing yards on Auburn, did something that no one thought was possible. So here's old Joe Moorhead on that, as well as how Nick Fitzgerald is kind of adjusting to not only coming back from an injury, but playing in this new offense.
No, I think we did a very good job running the football, having some good physicality at the line of scrimmage. Obviously, Nick and Kylan and Aries ran the ball well. We had some timely passes. We're able to put some points on the board against a very, very good defensive front. And, you know, we're leading the country in scoring defense right now, so our defense continues to play well and created some timely opportunities on special teams.
Certainly, I mean, from a distance, and that's where I was, Nick looked a little different this week than in previous weeks. What did you see? What was different?
Yeah, coming off of the Florida game, you know, as an offensive staff, we sat down and talked about what we needed to do to be successful and who were our playmakers and what were our strengths, and let's play to those and minimize our weaknesses. And, you know, we felt with the very physical and athletic front seven of Auburn and how well coached they were, we needed to do some things formationally and with motions to kind of neutralize their ability, to affect the run game. And I thought we did that pretty well on Saturday.
I know it's always difficult to gauge what's inside someone's mind, especially when they're dealing both mentally and physically in terms of recovery. But do you feel today that Nick is back to where he was? And I realize you weren't there, but he's had a long road back. But where is he in relation to what he's had to overcome?
Now, I felt like it was a little bit of a breakthrough moment for Nick this year. And obviously, we didn't throw the ball too much, but, you know, had a couple of timely completions in the pass game, but it looked like, you know, his urgency, his physicality, his ability to make defenders miss running the football was something we hadn't seen thus far this year.
All right, Shane, so main takeaway there from Joe Moorhead and just kind of their, more or less, they abandoned the pass game and just grounded out there against Auburn's tough front.
Yeah. Boy, this has been Auburn's day, ain't it? They get it from every angle. Mississippi State on a bye week, we're going to talk about Auburn. I don't know, man. This isn't, you know, he talked about game flow and letting this thing just, like, play itself out. Well, I tell you what, man, you cannot run a quarterback 30 times a game. I mean, it worked this week. Pruitt even joked about him being sore because I guarantee it, man, he got tackled 30 times too. He is pretty sore today, and you're not gonna be able to do that against the rest of his team. Could you imagine him doing this against LSU or A&M's running game? I mean, say what you want, A&M's got an exceptional rush defense. Mm-hmm. Alabama, I mean, he may not survive the season if they keep doing that. So, if you're gonna go to this Wildcat thing, you may want to think about just putting a running back there.
Yeah, and I mean, like you said, it worked for Auburn. How much longer will it work, particularly with a guy who is coming off a serious foot injury there? And, you know, Joe Moorhead indicates there that Nick Fitzgerald is back to 100%, but I'm not buying it. And, I'm not saying he's playing hurt, because I don't think that's the case, but just Nick Fitzgerald, I'm used to seeing him being basically the fastest player on the field. I mean, I can't count how many times I've seen him, you know, once he breaks the second level, and, I mean, corners and safeties can't catch him. And in this Auburn game, there were linebackers getting him from behind.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he's still very effective. I'm not trying to trash the guy. He just broke the all-time record for rushing yards from a quarterback in the entire history of the SEC. But he just doesn't have that top speed right now, and I don't know if he's going to have it at any point this year. I mean, maybe he does have it by the end of the year. That would be huge for Mississippi State, but I would be cautious of just how often they're going to run him like this. And, you know, they've got some terrific running backs in Kylan Hill and Aries Williams. I think they really need to make them a little bit more of the focus of the offense than just running Fitzgerald 25 times a game.
Well, and Moorhead's smart. I mean, everybody that they're going to be playing is going to be watching this game at one point, you know, in film study. They're going to be prepared, better prepared for, you know, the RPO. But I will say this, if you take advantage of it where they're afraid to not have eight in the box because the quarterback can take off, that makes it a little bit easier on these receivers. And, you know, Coach Moorhead was, he was a, When he was getting recruited down to Mississippi State, at that time, it was one of the best offensive coordinators in the country. Mm-hmm. And I still think he has it in him. He just needs to take advantage of the weapon he has. And right now, Fitz's legs is a weapon because teams got to fear that. So this gives Fitz a little bit more opportunity. And that's what they need to be focused on this bye week is getting this team vertical, getting him and the receivers on the same page, and really take advantage of that.
Yeah, I agree, Shane. So that's all I got on this episode. Do you have anything before we jump off here?
No, that's it, man. Tomorrow we're going to do Tell the Truth Thursday, so we'll be cranking that up. And, well, you can't catch us out on the Reddit. Of course, you can find us there at That SEC Podcast. Feel free to jump on, shoot some mailbag questions. We're going to try to be extremely active. I've been lacking there, but Saturday, me and Mike, we're going to try to get back and forth about some of these games and trying to use that platform just a little bit more than usual. So I do appreciate all the listeners taking their time to rate and review us on iTunes. Of course, just listen to us, period. I just appreciate everybody.
Yeah, and we just look at our metrics, and we've got we had an all-time high in downloads on Monday. So we really appreciate everyone that's tuning in, and I think people are liking the content. I mean, if we keep setting records for downloads, so we really appreciate everyone for joining in, and I appreciate you, Shane, for joining me as always, and we'll catch you on the next one.
I feel like Drew Brees. See you guys. Go Vols. Yeah, man. I mean, always we're – shit. Okay. Well, Mike, we are on the Reddit, R-E-D-D-I-T. Okay, let me try again.
Thank God this is digital, not tape here.
I know, right? We're running out.
What?
I was like, that's SEC. No shit, Sherlock. It's the SEC podcast. Sorry about that. That's just how the cookie crumbles, Mike.